Session number 13101, Reel 1.
Wing Commander Ironside, Reel 1. Whereabouts were you born, please?
I was born in Chislehurst in... no, Orpington in Kent.
Which year was that?
1915.
What did your father do for a living?
My father was a civil engineer.
Were you educated in South East London?
No. I went to a prep school called Ashdown House in Sussex, near East Grinstead. And then I went to Wellington College in Berkshire.
How old were you when you finished?
Oh, I suppose about 17 and a bit.
What did you do?
I went first of all to Westlands Aircraft Company as an apprentice, and then got a short service commission in April 35.
Why did you go in for the Air Force?
Well, I wanted to fly, really.
And can you tell me what flying was like in the years before the war?
Oh, it was very enjoyable. Much more freedom than there is these days. I trained on Tudors and Harts and Furies at number 6 FDS at Netherhaven, and then I was posted to the Sudan when the Abyssinian-Italian War was on, where we had some dreadful old aeroplanes called Gordons.
What was so dreadful about them?
They were extremely slow, and we couldn't fly after midday because when our airfield was at 3,000 feet in the Red Sea Hills. It got extremely hot, and the Gordon had a maximum speed of about 85 knots. And a stalling speed at that height and in that temperature about 80 knots. So we worked from about 6 in the morning till midday, and then again in the evening.
Were they supposed to be a bomber or a fighter or what?
They were a bomber. We had a CO called Group Captain Collishaw, who was a VC from the First War. And a very warlike gentleman he was.
In what sense?
Well, he used... about once a month we used to be all called together and he would read out our war aim, which was to bomb Massawa until there was nobody left, which I think would probably have been one sortie because the Italians had some very good fighter aircraft in those days.
What did the rest of the air crews think about being given such an objective?
Well, I don't know. We just hoped it wouldn't happen. We were only there for about 6 months or so.
What was the attitude towards the Italians?
Well, it wasn't very friendly, because I remember when I came out there on a trooper in Port Said, it wasn't a very large ship. And there was an enormous Italian trooper moored alongside us in Port Said. And they were all spitting over the rails at us, which didn't improve matters.
Were any of you hit?
What, with the spit?
Yes.
I don't think so, I don't know.
Did you respond No. Appropriately?
No. Very well disciplined in those days.
Was the Italian Air Force regarded as formidable in East Africa?
Yes, they had CL-32s, which was a good little fighter, and I think they had 42s as well, which was the souped-up version. We wouldn't have lasted 5 minutes. We did capture an intern one who lost his way. That was a Caproni 133, a sort of twin-engined, well, almost a civil aeroplane. They were probably using it for troop carrying or something. That was interned at Port Sudan.
Did you have anything to do with his capture?
No. No, I think he just landed at Port Sudan by mistake. He thought he was at Massawa or something like that.
Did you have any close contact with him?
No. No, there was a fighter squadron at Port Sudan of Bulldogs.
But you've been a bomber pilot originally, had you?
No. I was trained as a fighter pilot, but I think probably because the Abyssinian War was on, they needed somebody out there, so I went, along with about three others, I think.
What were living conditions like at Gibet?
Bloody awful. After we'd been there for about a month, I think, the sort of rainy season started. By about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, there was invariably an enormous sandstorm, and that was followed by an equally large rain storm. And all the wadis got filled up. I mean, they were dry in the morning, and then there was 10 feet of water in them by the afternoon, and everything stayed wet, and the tents got washed away. It was extremely unpleasant.
How healthy were you all?
I don't think anybody suffered. There was no malaria or anything like that.
Was it a tedious time there, or did you enjoy it?
Well, I was young. I enjoyed it. Yeah, the flying was quite fun. It was rather like flying over the surface of the moon, because there were no trees, no nothing, and just these mountains.
When you returned to Britain, did you feel that a war was approaching?
No, I think you mean a European war?
Yes.
A little later on, I think. I came back on the freighter that brought the aeroplanes back from Port Sudan, and then was posted back to the squadron to Worthy Down near Winchester. That was quite a nice posting, and then they were forming some battle squadrons at Upwood. And I got posted there. That was quite a good time too. I liked the battle. It was a good aeroplane to fly, but useless in war, of course.
They got a very bad reputation in the early stages of the war.
They did. They all got shot down. Fortunately, I got posted again before we went to war.
Why was it such a good plane to fly?
Well, it was quite handy. I could aerobat the thing and roll it and loop it. Don't think my crew enjoyed it very much. And as long as nobody knew about it, it was all right. Very strong. We had one aircraft that crashed at night. What is now Blackbush airport, no, near Camberley, and it went straight through a forest of fir trees. The wings came off, and all the crew were perfectly all right. Gives us some idea of how strongly it was built.
Do you know the pilot?
Yes. I don't remember his name now.
Now, I think that in August 1938, you took up a job at RAF Bentley Priory.
That's right.
Can you tell me about that, about getting that job?
Yes. The CO called me in one day and said, the way to a PC is to be a PA to an AOC. Would you like to go to be PA to the AOC Cranwell?
The way to be a PC?
A permanent commission, yeah. So I only had a short service. And I thought about it because I knew the AOC Cranwell was mad on polo. And I'm not particularly keen on horses. So I decided, well, a little suffering is worth a PC. So I said yes. And then it all got changed, and I was appointed PA to Stuffy Downing.
What kind of responsibilities did you have?
Oh, difficult to describe. My appointment was pilot and PA to the CNC. I only piloted him on one occasion because we used to fly from Hendon, 24 Squadron, Communication Squadron, where we had two Harts. And he flew one and I flew behind him in the other one. I say I only flew him once, and that's when he was running up without an irk on the tailplane, and the boat broke the prop. But he's very decent. He didn't pull rank and say, I'll fly it. He said, no, you fly me.
Without an irk on the tailplane?
Yeah. Well, when you run them up, you need somebody there to hold the tail down, you know.
What was he like to work for?
I really enjoyed it. I have the greatest admiration for him. He's the most honest man I've ever met. Of course, it doesn't pay to be honest when you're of air rank.
How did his honesty show itself to you?
Well, I admired the way that he always said what he thought. And a particular incident, at Christmas time, you get showered with diaries and various other knick-knacks from all the aircraft companies and engine makers and so on. My job was to send them all back with thanks.
Was he really stuffy?
He was very shy, but when pressed he was outspoken.
How did his shyness show itself?
Well, he was not a sociable sort of chap. He scarcely ever drank. Which leads me on to another incident. The Air Ministry thought that he shouldn't go flying around in Harts and things, and so they gave him, I'm not sure what it was, I think it was a Percival Mule Gull or something like that, a little twin-engine thing. And we went to France one day in this, and he wasn't very good at flying it anyway, but until we managed to get up and down. And we arrived this airfield, which I think was called Lille Seclin. It was near Lille. And the object of the visit was to observe the French air defence system. When we landed on this airfield, the grass was at least knee-high, probably more than that, and lined up along the side were a lot of incredibly old aeroplanes, the sort of things with biplanes with skis in between the wheels, which I didn't think it existed even in France. And we taxied up to the, I think there was a hangar of some sort there, rather temporary looking hangar, and lined up there were about a dozen beribboned French generals and Stuffy got out and he went along the whole line shaking hands and saying, "The name's Dowding, the name's Dowding, the name's Dowding." His French was extremely limited. And then we got into various motor cars and all went off to a large restaurant, it being sort of 11:30, 12 time, and had a fabulous lunch, which went on for a good 2 hours, with an awful lot of wine, which of course Stuffy didn't touch. He hardly ate anything. I could see he was getting extremely uptight about all this. But far worse was to come, because all these jolly generals backed into cars again, and we went into a cellar and sat on some hard chairs, and in one corner of this large room there was a phone box and another hard chair with an airman sitting on it, a French airman. And just opposite him, as it were a yard or two away, was a blackboard covered in squares. And we sat there for some considerable time, and then the phone rang and the airman went into the box. There was a lot of wee 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 going on. Then he went out and put an arrow on the blackboard. I think it was a red arrow or something. And this went on for an hour or so, until the blackboard was covered in arrows of various colours. Well, I don't think anybody knew what the hell it was all about. And going back, Stuffy never said a word. Absolutely silent. And I think that's where he got his utter distrust of the French, which was to show later.
What were all the arrows supposed to represent?
I don't know. I don't think anybody knew. All the generals were chattering away to each other. And
when was this visit?
That was in, I would think about 39 it was, I think, beginning of 39, I think, probably.
Was he a hard taskmaster?
No, I don't think so. He worked all hours of the day, and I had to keep up with that, but I didn't mind. It was all interesting.
What was his attitude if you made a mistake?
Didn't usually say anything. He wouldn't tear you off a strip. He would just express a little displeasure, that was all.
It's always said of him that he had some rather mystical attitudes. Did that ever come through to you?
No. He was a churchgoer, and I don't think it was... I think the Battle of Britain really got him going on the spiritualism business. I don't know. I didn't. Most of that I read about afterwards. Well, he wrote a couple of books on it, which I have up there somewhere, I think, but I couldn't understand them anyway.
Because you went back to Bentley Priory for the latter part of the Battle of Britain, I think.
Yeah.
So you were with him then?
Yeah. But things were far too hectic to be bothered about spiritualism or anything. We used to go out and sit in trenches and watch if the AK-AK was doing its stuff and things like that.
Whereabouts was this?
Well, I think one day we went to Biggin Hill or somewhere around Biggin Hill.
And were they doing that stuff?
Well, they were shooting up an awful lot of stuff. I don't think they were hitting anything. It looked impressive.
Was Dowding a calm person, or did he ever get excited?
No. Very calm. Very calm. He was an introvert.
Did he ever confide anything personal to you?
No. No, he was a very private sort of chap.
Or express any opinion about the coming war?
Oh, he knew it was coming. He didn't sort of say to me, "Well, we're going to war then." No. Oh, everybody knew it was coming.
But about Britain's prospects in the coming war?
Well, he maintained all along that provided he had the right number of fighters, he could win it. But you didn't think beyond the next week or two. I mean, you win the Battle of Britain, but then the outlook's still pretty poor.
Did he have any friends, close friends, in Fighter Command at headquarters, or was he very much isolated?
No, I think Keith Park, his SASO, Senior Air Staff Officer, I think he was a friend of his. He certainly admired Park, and respect was mutual.
Did his family ever come into Bentley Priory?
Saw his son there once, I think. But his wife had died a long time ago. And I think that apparently was when he got stuffy, so they say. But he lived with his sister. And that was one of my tasks. About every few months, we had to have a sherry party. And it was really gruesome. Because my job was to go and get people to attend it. And nobody wanted to, because it really was terrible, because Stuffy would have one sherry, I think. And there was an ancient gramophone that used to play these rather ancient tunes on. And after a time, I found it most difficult to get anybody to come.
So it wasn't the kind of atmosphere in which you could let yourself go?
Oh, no. No, not at all.
But I suppose people, in a way, were obliged to come if he was their boss.
Yeah, well... it was difficult for me, but I could use a certain amount of influence behind his name.
Did he have any small talk?
No. No, he was always thinking about waging war, really.
Did he seem to have any outside interests?
I don't think so, no.
Did you feel comfortable in his presence or uncomfortable?
Well, it's a very difficult one to answer that. Sometimes comfortable, sometimes when he was being really introverted, and I felt like a spare part. It's difficult to engage him in conversation.
Did you attempt it?
Oh, sometimes, yes. But it was hard going, unless it was a matter in hand, such as how many guns should we have and things like that.
What did he look like?
I wouldn't say he was handsome, but he was a well set up chap.
Was he smart or scruffy?
Smart. Always smart. No.
Did you get any VIPs come in to see him?
Oh, hordes of them, yes. There were always government ministers and foreigners. we had the German Air Force over one day, and we went down, I think it was to Shoebury Ness, demonstrate anti-aircraft thing. That was a complete, I don't know whether it was done on purpose, but it really was appalling. We had some old 3-inch guns mounted on trucks, but the trucks wouldn't run, so they had to be towed by other trucks. And they sort of blasted off into the sky at nothing. And then I think it was a Bofors or two that shot at targets, but one never knew whether they hit them or not.
What was the attitude of the Germans, as far as you could say?
Well, I'd had a previous encounter with them when I was at Upwood. General Stumpf and General Udet and Milch, I think, they all came over, and we were briefed on the information we were to give them about the battles, and we were told that all their maximum performance was to be stated as the cruising performance. I don't think they believed a word of it, actually.
Do you remember them saying anything?
No, because they all spoke in German, which I didn't know anyway.
Were there any other attempts to pull the wool over their eyes?
Not as far as I was concerned. I mean, probably the top brass were pulling it.